Greetings, and welcome to another edition of Two Trek Nerds, the podcast that gives you fresh insights while watching one of the best TV shows ever made, Star Trek. My name is Kevin DeBeck.
And I'm Dan Watson.
Just a reminder of what we're doing here is that basically we're doing a rewatch of all the episodes of Star Trek, the original series, and dropping trivia bits and interesting observations by Dan and myself, the aforementioned Two Trek Nerds. Before we get started on the episode we're going to discuss, I want to thank you all who have pushed our download total to 111. Thank you for listening, and I hope you like what we have to offer here in our little corner of the internet. We have a lot of fun putting these together, and it's encouraging to me to know that there are fellow Trekkies out there who are having fun listening to us two chuckleheads throw our commentary out there about the original series. Thank you for listening, and I hope you keep tuning in as we make our way through all 80 episodes. Dan, your thoughts?
Well, didn't you say when you were looking at the logistics of where they've been downloaded at that we've got someone in Russia?
We had one download in Moscow. How about that?
Wow. That is crazy. That is interesting to think on, you know, someone on the other side of the planet. Is it someone who's trying to learn English as a second language?
And I'd be afraid what we'd be teaching them.
this is the only thing that can make it through the Putin's filters.
Maybe.
Just be careful you don't
wake up with polonium in your cereal or something.
Oh, dang it. You beat me to the polonium.
Ah, I was glad polonium. Shoot.
But despite our upbringing with probably the only movie that could beat Star Trek V would be Red Dawn. Mm-hmm. And, we are bridging the gap and extending a warm welcome to our friends on the other side of the planet. So
mm-hmm. I'll take it.
Okay, there we go.
All right. Let's see. Okay, so we're recording this on Labor Day 2024, and we just passed a somewhat dark anniversary in Trek lore. In the third season of Deep Space Nine, we have a two-part episode called Past Tense, where Sisko, Bashir, and Dax wind up in San Francisco in 2024, where Sisko takes over the role of Gabriel Bell, the man who led a riot to get the rest of the United States to pay attention to the problems of homelessness, mental illness, and people looking for work. That episode came out in 1995, and I have a memory thinking that 2024 felt like it was so far into the future. Well, here we are, and it's kind of eerie how some of the predictions made in that episode are kind of true. Now, I don't want to get too mired in the politics of our current times, but I'm hoping that in a couple of months, we can do what we can to turn our culture toward Gene Roddenberry's vision and away from environmental and societal collapse. Dan, do you have any thoughts on this?
Oh, man, that would have been a great prank, right? That would have been a deep cut for someone to dress up and say their name. You know, it was
Gabriel Bell.
Yeah, and call up a news station or something.
That would be something.
I saw a meme the other day about, you know, with the whole Boeing capsule being stuck and everything.
Mm.
And it said, get ready, world. We got 6 months and about 7 million gorilla or 7 billion gorilla costumes away from the greatest prank ever. You know?
Uh huh. Yeah, I saw that too.
That was a good one.
But, well, they. Go ahead. Sorry.
You go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, I was about to say. Then maybe we ought to do something to the Statue of Liberty to make it a little extra crispy or something.
Right. That's the second time I've had that reference this week.
Wow! Really?
Yes, I consist primarily of old movie and TV references.
But, you and me both, pal.
Yeah, but happy Labor Day to you. We've made it through most of this year. And, you know, I think we should dedicate this episode not only to our listener in Moscow, but also to all the space dudes we've seen in all the Star Trek movies, the people going through the Jeffries tubes, you know, the guy waving at the space dock as the Enterprise is launched. All of those mm-hmm. people who've worked in their fictional universe, this episode is for them.
Yes, and especially the dude in motion picture who was trying to fly away from, what was the name of the station? It's not coming to me, but
well,
was
Viger,
it Epsilon 9, I think?
Yeah.
I root for him as he's like trying to truck it away while the station's being consumed by Viger, and I think to myself, you know, What was his story like? You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Did he manage to escape? Did he float through the clouds as it went by? And did V'ger, like, not pay attention? And, you know, maybe the Enterprise picked him up at some point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you give the franchise enough time and they're going to have a backstory for that guy. So it's before
exactly.
We're done with this, the story, his story will be told.
Exactly. All right. In other news, one of the websites where I get my Trek news from is trekmovie.com, and I highly advise you all listening to go check it out because that's where I get all my Trek news from. And they had an excellent interview with Nick Meyer talking about the legacy of Wrath of Khan and how one of his pet projects is coming closer to fruition. A few years ago, he came out with the fact that he had written a script for a miniseries about the time Khan was on SETI Alpha 5 and what it was like before being discovered by Chekhov and Terrell and the Reliant crew. The kibosh got put on it and on that kind of idea, and it'll be coming out supposedly sometime next year as a podcast/radio play. So I'll be excited to hear it. But in the meantime, if you want to read a good Khan story, I recommend reading the trilogy of books written by Greg Cox called The Rise and Fall of Khan Noonien Singh. He weaves real history into the Trek lore of the eugenics wars, and was the last. And the last book tells of his time on SETI Alpha 5 before being rediscovered. Strange New Worlds, of course, has retconned Khan, that's easy to say, and the eugenics wars to happen sometime between now and 2056. Now, of course, we'll talk more about this when we get to Space Seed, but for the record, I'm sticking with the original timeline because that means Khan is a Gen Xer like Dan and I, and while I don't want to lay claim to someone who, you know, is a war criminal, but since we are the redheaded stepchildren of generations, he's part of the family that you don't want to invite to the barbecue, if you know what I mean. Dan, your thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah. When you said SETI Alpha 5, I can't ever hear that in a normal tone of voice. It always has to be, this is SETI Alpha 5! Exactly. And, you know, being Gen Xers it all makes sense, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We were the Gen X latchkey kids,
yep.
And boy, when you see Khan on that destroyed planet, you living in that pile of rubble, that is the ultimate latchkey kid, I thought. Pretty much. It all comes together with Khan.
So Strange New Worlds made it happen further into the future, and you know what? Khan's one of us, damn it, and I want to keep it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like an evil David Bowie or something, I suppose.
Something like that. All right, so now we come to the episode at hand, and the episode we're reviewing in this podcast is The Menagerie Part 2. Some of the guest stars in this episode are Malachi Throne, who plays Commodore Mendez. He was originally the voice of the Keepers, but was changed when they used the footage from the cage so it wouldn't sound too close to his voice when he was on The Menagerie. Of course, both he and Nimoy were on the very first episode of Star Trek, and they both appeared again together some 30 years later in the next-gen episode called Unification, Parts 1 and 2, where he played the role of Senator Pardek. And I always thought he had a really cool voice, and Malachi Throne died in 2013. Sean Kenny plays the role of the injured Pike. He later appeared in two other original series episodes, Arena and A Taste of Armageddon. Now, fortunately, he is still with us, and he works as a professional photographer in Los Angeles. Susan Oliver plays Vina, the only survivor of the doomed ship that crashed on Talos IV, who tries to convince Pike to stay and, by the end of this, gets what she wants and hopefully lives happily ever after. We get to see the Talosians again along with Vina in the second season of Star Trek Discovery, where Vina was played by Melissa George. I talked about Susan Oliver and how remarkable a person she was in the previous episode, and the one thing I didn't mention is that she played the first Orion slave girl. We've seen the Orions again in the third season of the original series, on an episode of Enterprise in Star Trek 2009, and on Lower Decks where Tendi is a part of the Cerritos crew. In the cage footage, Jeffrey Hunter was the original Pike, And depending on the story you believe, either his wife demanded too much money or had too much say in the types of roles he would play, or Hunter believed himself to be a movie actor who didn't want to play on the small screen. In either case, The Cage and The Menagerie are the only times we see Hunter as Pike. Of course, Anson Mount plays Pike on the prequel series Strange New Worlds, where we get to see his time as Enterprise captain. And on a side note, I really like Strange New Worlds. Since I wasn't alive when the original series aired, watching this, I think, is the closest to what it must have been like back then with the original Star Trek. I've enjoyed watching it. My only complaint is that they only make 10 episodes a season, and next season won't be out until next year. I'm also hoping they won't cancel it after 5 seasons. I hope they keep making this show for a long time. Oh, and one more piece of trivia about the Menagerie Part 2. According to IMDb.com, they shot a scene with McCoy and Scotty where they found out which computer Spock tampered with by detecting the copper from his sweat that Spock left behind, but it was ultimately cut from the show. Since the script used footage from the original pilot, it was only 64 pages. And there are 2 references to the movie that had the biggest influence on Roddenberry while he was creating Star Trek. And that movie, of course, was Forbidden Planet. In the Cage footage, Spock mentions hyperdrive. Of course, that word is more associated with Star Trek now. But in the recap, Talos IV is mentioned as a, quote, forbidden planet. So, you know, it's kind of loose one. This is only 1 of 3 episodes outside of the 2 pilots where McCoy does not make an appearance. The other 2 are What Are Little Girls Made Of and Errand of Mercy. Those are my trivia bits for The Menagerie. Dan, what do you think about The Menagerie Part 2 before we begin?
Yeah, you know, there seem to be a lot of Star Trek episodes where they function on, they focus on men and women's relationships. And I need a mea culpa for my last one where I spoke ill of the institution of marriage. So I'll retract that for the benefit of Paramount, Plus, CBS, Viacom, or any other subsidiaries. So. Yes, in case we get dozens and hundreds of viewers at some point, I'll need to be good on that. But no,
okay.
I don't want to spoil too much of our study of this episode. But you had mentioned in previous episodes and this one about excitable Spock, mm-hmm. you know, and then the differences of having a person playing Pike versus mm-hmm. Shatner's Captain Kirk. And so I'm going to be focusing on that. This episode, so and I think okay. we talk about that a little bit later. I did my homework and I read
excellent,
our,
very good. So, yeah. All right,
yep.
All right, part 2 debuted on November 24th, 1966, and Robert Butler was given directing credit. As for most of this episode, his footage was used. It was Mark Daniels who directed the scenes on the quote modern Enterprise, but they shared the credit with Butler, which you know is kind of nice. This was originally written by John D.F. Black and heavily rewritten by Gene Roddenberry. I want to remind everyone that my sources of information for this is mostly IMDb.com, Inside Star Trek by Herb Solow and Bob Justman, the serialized stories written by the late James Blish, and of course, just stuff I've picked up over the years watching these episodes over and over again. The opinions expressed by Dan and myself are in no way influenced by CBS, Viacom, Paramount, Paramount Plus, or any of their subsidiaries. We are watching the remastered episodes on Paramount Plus, but if you have the original DVDs with the original effects on them, this should work as well. So, without any further ado, let's hit play in 3, 2, 1. Now, this recap is probably than the comic one I just tried to pull off, and I must say I do like the black background as Kirk recaps what's happened in the previous episode. This, of course, is the only time a captain's log recounts the events of her previous episode. It's very artsy looking, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It's a sharp uniform.
I'd hate to be described as a shell of a man.
Unless someone said you're large caliber.
I'm like, what?
Unless you were large caliber.
Ah. You know, when they did this as a theatrical release, I wonder if they cut this part out or if they just went into episode two.
Right. Another mea culpa, I described this as the town of Bristol in our last episode.
Ah. You're mea coupling all over the place here.
Yes, yes. I'm trying to be a good boy on Labor Day. I wonder if any cosplayers dress in these uniforms. That'd be a deep cut.
Huh, that's a good question. Oh, to be dressed up as Commodore Mendez, you mean?
Yeah, or in these original uniforms from the...
Hmm. That would be kind of hard to do, because they look kind of silky, don't they?
Yeah, they certainly do.
Yeah. And thus finishes the only teaser that was a recap of the previous episode.
You know, Kevin, during our youth, the science fiction shows we watched had some pretty darn good music and audio tracks.
You know, I agree. Like Battlestar Galactica, there mm-hmm. are times that, like, oh, I yeah. just pull up to listen to the theme song, and it's like, it's too bad they don't do epic things like that anymore, you know?
That's true.
Yeah. Now, interesting that they're reviewing what happened, and you can hear the music on the feed, and you'll notice that the rest of the court-martial crew are gone. And I wonder if it was, like, because it was top secret or something. And I'll say this, Jeffrey Hunter did have the looks of a movie star, and it's a pity he didn't live longer. He died in 1969 after a series of blows to the head. His most famous movie was one titled King of Kings, where he literally played Jesus. And the one movie I've seen him in, he had a bit part in The Longest Day.
When he died, he said blows to the head. Was he attacked or accident?
Well, one was because it was a movie set, and then it happened again on a plane, and he had a mini stroke. And then in his home, he fell down and landed on the floor, and, like, he died of a brain bleed.
Dang.
Yeah. Now, the head keeper here is played by Meg Wiley. I once saw her in a Twilight Zone episode, and while she wasn't wearing the giant prosthetic head, she gave the stare that she does here, and it was still plenty creepy. She died in 2002 at the tender age of 84. Also note that the veins on her head move. This was done by creating an air bubble under the makeup and using a squeeze bladder to make it move. Hell of a time to be caught in your bullshit, isn't it? I do like the look on his face when he's temporarily stopped in his tracks before he flings himself against the barrier. That's what everyone wants to hear. Now, you notice the briefing room looks very similar to the one we saw in Where No Man Has Gone Before, as they just reused the set for a second pilot. And there, of course, is Majel Barrett. I got to meet her in person once, and her eyes were really that blue. Her role as number one is now being played by Rebecca Romaine, and she also has a name, Una Chin Riley.
Buzzing about.
Mm-hmm.
That seems very informal for a Klingon.
For a Vulcan.
Mm-hmm. What'd I say? Klingon?
Yes, you did.
I need a full demerit for that.
Another mea culpa.
Yes. Mm.
Now, of course, in Strange New Worlds, Pike got to revisit Rigel 7, and we found out that it's the radiation in the atmosphere that makes the inhabitants act more violently. Ah, nothing beats rescuing a princess, eh?
The haunting background music is the best.
Yes. Oh, here he comes. Boy, it's easy to tell when they're cutting back to the briefing room, isn't it?
Yes.
Have you wanted to do that, Dan? Just rip a door off the hinges?
Oh, yeah. Here's me without my morning coffee.
Wait till the close-up. Well, I was about to say, you know, apparently giant warriors don't go to the dentist very often.
Yes.
So, the guy playing him, his name is Michael Dugan, and he was also a stuntman, which I guess that's probably why I got cast for this. He died in 2002 at the tender age of 90 years old, and I don't know why, but I do like the tuba music at the beginning there.
Oh, come on.
But this is kind of slow pace compared to the fight stuff they do now, isn't it?
Yeah. Quick.
Oh, that's going to hurt.
That's pretty good. Oh, and a couple hits to boot. Yeah. There, impale him on that.
Yep. Here it comes. I feel going to say, that's going to leave a mark. Creepers.
Isn't this person that said, if you remove everything, it's impossible, only the possible is quite unbelievable.
Yeah, that was a quote from Sherlock Holmes, I think.
Yes.
And actually Spock quotes that in Star Trek VI.
Right.
Yeah.
So far.
Mm-hmm.
It's like an entire species of J.D. Vances.
Yeah.
I wonder how it's creeped out.
Uh-huh. What every guy wants to hear, am I right? Oh, yeah, we get a taste of excitable Spock here. Now, I find it interesting that they use this giant gun thing instead of ship's phasers. And I'm kind of wondering if maybe they hadn't invented phasers yet for the Enterprise.
That's an interesting thought.
Yeah. Although I guess it's a lot more dramatic to have this big gun thing shooting this powerful stuff at this cliff face.
Oh, and hear the sound effect in the back, Kevin. It sounds like warp drives being overstressed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Oh. Yep. There goes excitable Spock again. Now, that sound that's winding down, they used that a lot in the early episodes when it was like dropping out of warp and stuff. So a war that would wipe out the surface, I'm guessing, was some kind of nuclear exchange or something.
Could have been.
Yeah. Now, of course, in the original cut of the cage, you actually got to see some of them, but not for this. Damn, Pike's a bit of a cad.
Mm-hmm.
W-O-M-A-N. I gotta say, when Pike reneged on his part of the deal, I always thought that was just kind of a dick move on his part.
Yeah. Mm-mm.
Kind of reminds me of a scene in The Matrix. I gotta say, this part always kind of freaked me out as a kid. Not like the flames and stuff, but like the stuff dripping off his hands as he's like rolling around in agony. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What the hell kind of fable was Pike told as a child? And, you know, what kind of parents did he have? I mean, my God.
Really? More unpleasant than burning?
Burning in hell? Yeah. Ugh. I shudder the thought. Oh, get ready. Excellent. So this scene here is the only time in the original series that we have an idea of what Earth looks like in the 23rd century. Roddenberry didn't have the budget to create what his idea of a future Earth would look like. Now, you'll notice the horses. When Pike was reintroduced on Strange New Worlds, he was riding his horse in the wilds of Montana. In the uncut version of this, we find out that he's in Mojave in a future where it's no longer a desert.
Evidently, there's a lot of denim in the 23rd century.
Apparently, yeah. Yeah, for a 23rd century look, it looks awfully early 60s, doesn't it? I like the turtleneck. It's a nice touch.
Oh, yeah. She looks like Barbara Eden.
Yeah, I can see that. Oh, did you catch that? Shout out to both episode names. I feel like there's a comment there somewhere, but I'm not sure quite how to wrap it up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what heterosexual dude would want to hear that you're the dream of the perfect man for someone?
Wait, we're not?
A what?
This is all been a lie. Send a charade.
Yeah.
I wonder where the painting for the background is.
I don't know. That's a good question. That's kind of cool looking, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh. I guess now we're going to see what it's like for Pike to get his freak on. Oh, and now we see Vina as the Orion slave girl, and there's an interesting story about this. So, they were testing the color of the paint, and Majel Barrett volunteered for the screen test. And every time they got the test footage back, the shade of green wasn't good enough. Come to find out that the guys that were developing the film thought that the green was off and kept color correcting the film. And fortunately, Barrett was a good sport about it. They kept painting her greener and greener, and they kept wondering why it wasn't coming out. Yeah, how much of that was Roddenberry getting his freak on when he was writing this?
You wonder.
Well, you know, if you're into that sort of thing.
Who are these other Starfleet officers next to Pike? That's what I want to know.
Well, the creepy looking dude isn't. Oh, and for some reason, his bug eyes always kind of messed with me. Anyway, his name was Joseph Mel, and I once saw him be nice to the Brady kids, and he was even creepy in that. That guy right there, he died in 1977.
But the first guy has a Star Trek insignia as if he's a captain or something.
We never learn his name or what ship he's from, but yeah, I guess it's assumed he's probably a captain somewhere.
Again, give the franchise another couple decades, we're going to have this backstory.
Oh, and so he ran out of the room, and in my notes I said, is he trying to fight off an erection? I was watching this with my daughter, and she said, this is what happens when you take the brown acid.
That's a sweet cape.
It is very shiny, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, and I like how they introduce Vina back in here in a second. Right there. Hello, Federal. Would it be cool to actually see someone say, you know what, I'm not doing this, and then walk away? All right, get ready for the line of the episode. Here it comes.
The win!
The ultimate excitable Spock line.
Oh, Captain.
Yeah.
That's what Yeoman Rand said.
Now, of course, the redheaded lady there is Yeoman Colt, and she's played by Laurel Goodwin, who died in 2022, and she was the last surviving main cast member. She was only 79. Now, ironic she said that, as Majel Barrett was the voice of the computer in all Star Trek shows and movies right up until Star Trek 2009. Don't. Damn, the Talosians don't hold back. I need to tell that to the sixth graders I teach.
Right.
Okay, so we to assume this is hours later and they're all just sleeping, or are they just faking sleeping, thinking that they're going to try to slip in?
I think they're faking it, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the original cut, the creature you see here was another animal in the menagerie, where you actually get to see it, like, walking around and stuff. Now, you notice he used the term laser instead of phaser.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I got to admit, I've never understood this part. I know they needed to break to a commercial, but this part has never made sense to me.
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense.
Yeah. So, okay, so they all vote that he's guilty, and we go to commercial, and then it comes back. All right, I'll wait a minute. So they're zooming in on Talos 4, obviously. So, didn't they just vote to convict him? Like, why didn't the trial end there? Why did they wait to see what happened when the ship entered orbit? Like I said, I've never understood how they did this. Does it make sense to you, Dan?
No, it does seem slightly odd.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Aha, or something. Now, of course, in the original edit, you see the Talosians going through the computer records right before they got to the surface. So that's what this part's really about. Oh, and the one on the right was played by Sandra Lee Gimple, and she is the only surviving actor from the original pilot.
When were they talking about captivity that's pleasant and benevolent? That seems odd.
Kind of a bit of an oxymoron then, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So for this to accomplish this shot, Susan Oliver had to hold still over hours where they used mechanical means to hold her steady. I can't imagine how hard that was. Of course, now they'd probably do all this with CGI, but... And apparently, as they were, like, literally, like, strapping her in place, it was kind of painful.
So how old is her character supposed to be?
Well, you remember number one saying, well, you crashed here 18 years ago, and she was an adult. She wasn't a baby. So probably so middle age would be my guess.
Even if she was in perfect health, her clock may have ran out. The Talosians needed better knowledge of human lifespans and physiology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm guessing she's like middle-aged, probably this, well, Pike's probably in his 30s, I'm guessing. So she's probably older than him.
Yeah, well, if she's a Starfleet, she's an adult, she's at least 20.
Yeah, yeah.
And then 19th,
yeah. Yeah.
But that could be an illusion, too.
What? Go ahead. What?
How does he know that that's not an illusion, that she was... It's all illusion.
Huh. So, like, a double illusion.
Could be. Double secret illusion.
Yeah, exactly. Now, of course, in the original edit, that's where you see Vina walk off with a fake Pike. Now, footage they use at the end of this to show Pike going off to his new life, free of the chair.
Was this the episode, Kevin, they said that saved Star Trek?
Yes, The Menageries Part 1 and 2. Yes, it did. There it is again. So, do we think Picard was a Pike fan? Don't you hate it when you discovered you've been talking to no one?
It's like when your rally is the largest rally and then it's gone.
You know, I'm thinking of that Neil Diamond song, I Am, I Said, where he said, no one heard at all, not even the chair.
I mean, couldn't if you went back to the planet without capturing a starship and doing a giant rewind?
Say that again.
I mean, was the whole point of this basically to get him back so he could live in a fantasy?
Yes. So that way he could live a life that where he's not trapped in a useless body, basically.
it's like those movies where they say it's diabolically simple. Like, wait, no, it's not. It's needlessly complex.
Uh-huh. Well, isn't that convenient? You know, it's nice to know they can still josh with each other after all this stuff that happened. Now, it's been pointed out that there's no way Spock got Pike to the transporter room and down to the surface that quickly. Now, the conjecture is that the Keeper wanted Kirk to know Pike was going to be okay. And, of course, this was the original footage after the Keeper said, and more. So this was originally the fake Pike going back with Vina. And this is one of the few times that the credits rolled while the action was still going on. Usually it was after the show was over. Of course, this matches nicely with the closing scene at the end of part one. All right, so my closing thoughts. It's interesting watching this and knowing Pike's fate while watching Strange New Worlds. It's kind of like reading the last page of a book to see how it ends. And at the end of part one, I was jonesing to see part two, and it's seldom a good thing to be left hanging in the balance like that. It's also interesting to me to see how different Star Trek could have been if NBC had picked up the show with Jeffrey Hunter at the helm. I once heard an interview with Leonard Nimoy that the reason he's, quote, excitable Spock, and Dan, you kind of alluded to this.
Right,
in this,
right.
And in the cage was that Hunter played a captain that was very calm and not very excitable, so Nimoy thought he had to bring the excitement. So when they cast Shatner, Nimoy played Spock a little cooler and calmer, as it was Shatner who brought the energy. And I gotta say, this is a great way to reuse the cage and to keep production going. It was Michael Okuda who wrote in the visual notes on to this episode on the original DVD set that this literally saved the show. And I give high marks both for performance and his historical significance. Dan, tell me your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, it's not my favorite episode by far, but you know, no Star Trek is a bad Star Trek. I think that's a term I'm going to coin because hey, we could be doing something other than watching Star Trek.
That's
it seems
true.
Like those aliens would have a better, you know, it's kind of a convoluted plot. Maybe there's a different way they could have got people to help out on the planet. But I mean, the meta game is you're trying to reuse the episode. So
yeah.
We'll give it a passing grade.
Yeah. And about there's no bad Star Trek. We might have to revisit that idea when we hit the season three.
Oh,
you know
okay.
What I mean?
Right. Right.
All right. Very good. That's all for this episode. Tune in next time when we watch the episode "The Conscience of the King," which gave us three things: one, another actor with a cool voice; second, it gave us Barbara Anderson, who went on to greater fame in the show Ironside. And third, the conjecture of what was an urban myth at Common Fear at the time when they shot that episode. What if Hitler lived and disguised himself and got away from the invading Soviet army? We'll have to find out. Credits. We're recording this on Discord, and my son Henry DeBeck is serving as engineer. And this is edited using the free version of Audacity software. Thank you all for listening. And we'll talk to you next time.
See you then.